Let me remind you the model. The model we are going to study here is a rotor model on the cubic lattice, where the rotor live on the link of a cubic lattice. Okay. And so we always consider this U much bigger than J G limit. Remember, J behave like a spring tension, string tension. If J is very big, we prefer the M I equal to zero states. Okay. And the G is really a string hopping term, because this B operator actually create a small loop. Or B dagger create a small loop. You know, when B operator act on the, when the B operator or B dagger operator, I, J, K, L, when act on the states where MI equal to zero states, where the MI is the eigenvalue for LZI. Okay, so maybe I should say MIJ because we use IJ to label a link. Okay, and that gave us a state with a small string, small loop of string on this link IJKL. Okay, however, if a B operator acts on the states which you already have a string, say you already have a string here, then the B operator suppose is here. Then what happened is that this B operator may annihilate a string here and create another string here, because it creates a small loop, and you may subtract the string here and add a string here. So if you may get a state where the string gets moved. So the B operator play two rules. Either it's a create small string if you act on the state with no string, or it can change shape of a string if you act on the state with some strings. So in a sense, the, just like a particle hopping operator, the B operator is a string hopping operator. The string can change the shape because it's a B operator. Okay, so that's a dynamics. Okay, so in yesterday we mentioned that in the limit, the G much bigger than J is a kind of, or J much bigger than G is very simple. The system prefers no string states. So MI equal to zero is a ground state. A more interesting phase is when G much bigger than J. When G much much bigger than J, the ground state is actually the superposition of all string configurations. So we can limit which when the G much bigger than J. Or maybe to the extreme, say if J equal to zero, the ground states of the system became the sum over all loops. The sum over all different loop configurations with equal weight, and that's give you ground states. And the reason is that when J equal to zero, the Q operator and the BIJKL operator, they commute. They always commute. So therefore, when J equal to zero, the Hamiltonian actually is a sum of commuting operator. So therefore, the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian simply is a common eigenstate of Q and B. And I mentioned that in the loop states, the Q operator always equal to zero. So loop state is eigenstate of a Q operator with eigenvalue zero. You know, that's what defines the loop states. And then this equivalent superposition gave us this happened to be the eigenstate of B operator. When you act on this equivalent superposition, let me see. Or maybe let me just write this X loops. When the B operator acts on this equivalent superposition, you get this state back. So therefore, this operator is also eigentheta of B operator with eigenvalue equal to 1. Okay. So now let's just go a little bit beyond that. So if the eigenvalue is 1, that means this term would contribute to a minus 2g, you know, for the ground states. For ground state, this sum, this minus g, this of this term, bijkl plus Hermitian conjugate, will give us minus 2g, because each is an eigenvalue. Ground state is eigenstate of a B operator with eigenvalue 1, so this term became minus 2g. Okay, so without sum, this one, just this term. But on the hand, I mentioned that the excited states, because this Hamiltonian is sum of commuting operator, we not only know ground state, we also know excited states. Excited is simply an eigenstate, the other eigenstate, other common eigenstate of Q and B. That's very simple. And this equal to superposition is a particular common eigenstate of Q and B. So let's look at the other eigenstate of Q and B that gave us the excited states. And we're still looking for the eigenstate where Q equal to 0, because if Q not equal to 0, Q is quantized as integer. If Q, because LZ is quantized as integer, so Q eigenvalue of Q always integer. So if Q is not 0, the minimum will be 1 or minus 1. If it's a 1 minus 1, the cost energy U is very big. So that's a huge energy cost, so let's ignore that. So that's high energy excitation, let's ignore that. We don't worry about that. So the g is small. So therefore, the other eigenstates of the B operator may correspond to low-lying excitation. So what is B operator? If you look at this B operator, you'll notice that this B operator is unitary. It's a unitary operator. That means B dagger times B always equal to 1 by construction. So as a unitary operator, its eigenvalue is a phase. Okay. So therefore, the other excited states, so we always assume Q equal to 0, so we don't write it. But the B operator can have different eigenvalues. So therefore, so other excited states, the B operator, bijkl, maybe let's write ijkl, this is a more convention, equal to e to the I theta ijkl. So this is another possible eigenvalue of B operator. So therefore, we can use this eigenvalue to label the eigenstates. So we have the other eigenstates where the B operator not equal to 1, but equal to some phase. Okay, so that's correspond to excited states. So therefore, those eigenstates are labeled by theta ijkl. On every square, we can have a theta. So that's the label the other eigenstate, because that is the eigenvalue of the B operator. It's labeled by the theta. So we can use this to label the excited states. And then for those states, the energy from this will be just a minus 2g cosine theta ijkl. That's it. Because B operator equal to the e to the I theta ijkl, the Hermitian conjugate gave us e to the minus I ijkl. The sum of the two gave us a 2 times cosine theta. So therefore, for these states, the energy for that state, for these particular states, the energy is equal to minus 2g. Sum over all squares, ijkl is a sum over all squares. So that's it. So this is a excited state are labeled by the phase on each plaquette. And the energy for such excited state is this. So this is what I mean by exasoluble limit. When j equal to zero, this Hamiltonian is exasoluble. We can use a theta on each square plaquette to label the excited states. And for each excited state labeled by this eigenvalue for B operator, its energy is also known, just this. Okay. And so what? This is a very strange, I mean, you know, look at this, this is a very, you should be like, this is a very strange system. This is a very strange system. Why is it strange? Because, so for example, let's consider a state where the theta equals 0 on every plaquette. However, only on one plaquette, theta not equal to 0. Let's consider that state. Only on one plaquette, theta not equal to 0. Then this looks like we have an excitation, localized excitation at that plaquette. Because on every plaquette, theta equals 0 means the energy is minimal. It's a minus 2g. So that's like a Guangxi energy. So no extra energy. So if only on one plaquette, theta not equal to 0, that means on that particular plaquette, you have an energy increase of delta E, which is equal to 2g 1 minus cosine theta ijkl. Suppose only on one plaquette, this is theta not equal to 0. So therefore, the energy increase is this one. But what is strange is about this excitation is that this one is eigenstates. And usually, when you have a localized particle whose energy is also localized, that one usually is not eigenstates. Because the particle can move. Only the wave packet or plane wave is eigenstates. A localized, spatially localized excitation is not eigenstates. And this is very special. For this particular case, this particular spatial localized excitation is eigenstates. What that means? That means if you view this as some kind of quasi-particle, this quasi-particle cannot hop. It's in the infinity mass limit. You know, the hopping amplitude from this side to next side equal to 0. That's how make it an even localized excitation is eigenstates. Okay. So I'm pointing this out just to emphasize that although this J to zero limit is soluble, we get energy, we get everything, but one has to appreciate that this is a very thick limit. We have excitation which do not allow to hop. But we know in general that excitation can move around, it can hop. So this infinite mass limit is a very special thick limit. And so the physics coming in that limit usually is not very realistic. I mean, just a very thick limit, just a very special thick limit, unstable. And another thing very special is that when you create this localized excitation, the energy is not even quantized. The theta can change continuously to 0. So not only we have an excitation, we have flat band, you know. Here the mass equal to infinity. So in the k-space, for such excitation, it will be like a flat band in a k-space. You know, no matter how your superposition in the plane wave, the wave vector the energy do not depend on wave vector because even localized excitation is eigenstates. But not only this excitation have a flat band, also as a changing theta, it can continuously go to 0. So this is a so now you can appreciate this for J equals 0 limit. It looks like you have a lot of a flat band excitation. And then the energy gap for this flat band excitation can approach 0. So there's a lot of low-lying mode, you know, each have a 0 velocity, but the energy gap up approaching 0. So there's a lot of low-lying states here. When you have a lot of low-lying state, it means instability, it means when you add a perturbation, things may change. Yes? Actually, in terms of wave functions, it's a little bit more complicated. But here, I just do this more formally. We say that usually, suppose when you have a Hamiltonian, which is equal to, for example, let's consider a simple case. A Hamiltonian is summation of a two commuting operator, A and B commute. Okay. And then what you can do is that you can label the eigenstate Hamiltonian using A and B, which is the eigenstate of A operator and B operator. Okay. So, and then you can find the energy, which is also a function of A and B. So these A and B are numbers. They are eigenvalue of A operator, B is eigenvalue of B operator. So what I'm doing here is like that. So this Hamiltonian is summation of a B operator, Bijk operator, they all commute. So then we use the eigenvalue of the B operator to label the eigenstates, the energy eigenstates. And so because they all commute, so all these eigenvalues are compatible. We can have a common eigenstate of the B operator. So we use the B operator eigenstate, eigenvalue to label the eigenstate, energy eigenstates. Then we get an energy as a function of those eigenvalues. So this is what I'm doing here. But however, what I try to emphasize here is that in the J to zero limit, it's like we have a many mode with zero velocity, and this gap of the mode actually approaches zero. So it's a very unstable situation. It's a very thick limit. So with this assumption, with this picture, so we want to say that what happens if J not equal to zero, but J much less than G. So still G much bigger than J, but J is not exactly zero. What happens there? And then this picture became incorrect. When J not equal to zero, these particular states, you know, these localized states, the theta I, J, K, L states, those states are no longer energy eigenstates. Those are no longer energy eigenstates. So another way to say is that when J equals zero, the theta have no fluctuation, because for the given theta, these are the energy eigenstates, so they don't fluctuate. But if J not equal to zero, this is no longer energy eigenstate, that means theta can fluctuate. But then we see that if J is very small, maybe fluctuation of theta is very weak. Theta have a weak fluctuation. And this is, at last, this is the key. You can see what we try to understand here, we want to get a classical picture of this model. Then you say, which variable it looks like classical variable. Now here is that when J is small, or when J goes to zero limit, the theta don't even fluctuate. It's pretty much like a classical variable. If J is small, theta can fluctuate, but its fluctuation is weak. So that's a variable with a weak quantum fluctuation. So it's a pretty good classical variable. So this is the intuition we try to develop. Using this exacerbable model, exacerbable limit, we somehow identify in the J much less than G limit. This is theta ijkl, or more precisely, is the eigenvalue of the B operator behave like a classical variable. So therefore, if you develop a classical picture of this model using this operator, then you should get a good results. And that is the main thing. That's how the intuition will develop. So, okay. So with this intuition, so we will go to our next step. That is to use an equation motion approach to find the Luani dynamics of this rotor model, but however, in the J much less than G limit, in this limit. Certainly, in the equation motion approach, the key is to choose the operator. You know, we pick some operator using the average operator to get equation motion, and then try to obtain the classical dynamics. You know, in this rotor model, seems the natural thing to do is you can choose this e to the say minus ij, you can choose this average. Remember, this operator actually is really e to the I theta. Maybe let's use it. Use minus and plus. Probably doesn't matter. It's I theta ij, this operator. So therefore, using average of this operator as a, to build equation motion is rather like we pick a theta, using theta as the our variable to build equation motion. That's very natural because we have a rotor model, so rotor is an angle. So actually, in the previous class when we discussed this superfluid multi-insular transition in the rotor model, we actually using this kind of variable. Actually, those variable is really the z1 z2 variable is related to this variable. So using z1 z2 is like using this variable. We use another variable to build the equation motion approach, to build the classical picture. But here I want to say that this choice for this model is very bad. Because remember, in this model, in a large U limit, the energy spectrum looks like this. So this is just loops at low energy. And those are open strings. And this is energy gaps to U. So why is this operator so bad? Because this operator will create an open string. Because it's you change the M on single link. That's correspond to a small segment of open string. So on this link, we just create a string on this link. So therefore, if you apply this operator to this ground state, which is only loops, you'll go to this high energy sector. And this is not what you want. What you want is that there's many loop states. We want to figure out among those loop states, which superposition gave us ground state, which superposition gave us low-lying excited state. So it's a loop dynamics. So for the loop dynamics, open end is not involved. Now this operator really jumped from the loop to this, then this is that's pretty bad. We hope we have an operator which acts within the loop state. So this is so again, using this picture, we already say that this is a bad choice. It's a good choice in the other model. But in this model, this is a bad choice. Because it's a bad choice really because we are thinking about U much bigger than J and the G limit. In this limit, this U is huge. We hope we can make this cut here, start at the low energy sector only. But this one makes low energy sector and high energy sector this operator. So it's a bad. So we shouldn't use this. And then when I say that, so we should use operator which act within the loops. And so why this operator is bad? Because this operator creates an open string. Then let's go out of a loop sector. So now you can see the B may be good. B create a closed string. So that means when you apply the B operator, B would act within this low energy subspace. So when you study the dynamics of B operator, then that's like a dynamics of loops. So that's a motivation. So now we have two reasons to choose the B operator as our good operator. One reason is that in the J equals zero limit, the B operator, the eigenvalue of B operator do not fluctuate. So B is very classical. That's good. And then another thing is that in the large U limit, the B operator acts within the loop space. So the B operator involves dynamics of loops. And this is another good reason. So that's it, actually. So the equation motion approach is very general. You can apply it to any system. But however, this intuition of choosing the proper operator to understand what kind of physics we are trying to study. We're trying to study the physics of a loop gas. This is the physical problem. So we have to choose a proper operator, the B operator to describe loop gas. So once you choose the B operator, then the other thing just follows. Then you can just using the standard equation motion approach, just not close your eye, but almost close your eye, just do it. That's mathematics. Okay, so let's just do it. So once we decide to choose a B operator, then then we just let me see. Copy some equation here. Let me just do it. So the great time derivative of the B operator. So let's using this 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So let's consider a plaquette, which is labeled 1, 2, 3, 4. So that's it's easier for me to label. And that's equal to I, the average of Hamiltonian and the B operator is 1, 2, 3, 4. That's it. Okay, what do you get? And so let me just copy the results, then I will explain. I, j, and the average of L21z plus L. 3, 2, 3. Then there's a B operator. And plus another term, which is a B is here, but there's a 4L on that side. Average. Basically, if you do the computation, you get this. So why I get this term? And the reason is that only this term do not commute with the B operator. You know, as I mentioned, the Q and the B commute with the B operator. Only this term do not commute with the B operator. Okay, that's one thing. Second is that suppose if L12 commutation with the B operator. 1, 2, 3, 4. What do we get? We kind of get I and this B operator again. This really because this L12 commute with L minus 12. This commutation relation. Basically give us back this operator with I there. Because this is really because this is a lowering operator of LZ. Okay, so there's a Z here. So so we'll do this commutation relation is just to get this operator back. Okay. And but then for the B operator is a product of a four operator, L minus here, 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 here. But when you do this commutation relation, only this segment is relevant. So when this LZ operator commutes with this B operator, it's really, it's only the other part can be just taken out, and only this segment is relevant, and you can use this. And when you use this, you can see that's a, you get this L21 operator back with extra I, so that's we have extra I here. Okay. And then, but here is LZ square, we have two of them. So when you do two of them, we have a square, then you have a LZ here, then plus another term, which is a B and LZ exchanged. You get a, when you have a square, you get this one. So that's how this form appears. You get something like that. You get the B operator and this L operator. But this 4L operator is sum of 4L operator, LZ operator, again along this perimeter. It's sum of along this, along the square. And that's it. So this is just a mathematics. You just do it. Okay, so what do we learn? We get one thing. And the next thing is that we do the next we do the usual thing is that Now we have a product operator, then average. Then we do the truncation. We first average, then make a product. So when you do that, this term can be combined, became minus 2ij, the average of L12 plus L, no L, 21 L32 plus L43 plus L14, they all z. Then have average of B, 1, 2, 3, 4, plus the, yeah, it's just that. So this is what we get. Yeah, so there's a derivative of B operator give us, get the equation motion is, again, average of B operator, but with the extra operator. So you have a new operator appears. And this is expected. And so why? Because, you know, this is the first of the time derivative equation. So it should be like one of a Hamiltonian equation. For the Hamiltonian equation, if a partial x should be equal to p, the partial p should give us x for the oscillator. So if you think this b operator or this average is like a coordinate, its time derivative should give us momentum. That solves our problem. Because when you're using the B operator, there's one issue. From equation motion approach, you only get the coordinate. Then you say to have a complete description of classical system, you need a coordinate and a momentum. So there's an issue, what is the momentum? Well, I try to say that here, this equation motion answer for you. When you start the equation motion of B operator, you get this new operator, and this new operator should play a role of a canonical momentum for this average of B, which we treat as a coordinate. So therefore, to complete the equation, we should have a partial x, x dot is something like a p, the p dot equal to something like x. Then we have a complete equation of harmonic oscillators. So this, what you get is rather just the first one, the x dot equal to p, and so this maybe looks like the momentum. Okay, so next, so with this kind of thinking, we're kind of hoping secretly that when we study the equation motion of L operator, we hope we will get B operator. And then everything is closed. Then we get closed equation motion. Then that's it. So there, what I try to say is that to find equation motion B operator do not close is okay because we should give a momentum. Then after we do the momentum, we should hope equation motion is closed. Then we have a full story. Okay. So from this this motivates us to calculate the equation motion of the L21, for example, average. And this is the I average of Hamiltonian L21. That's it. So this is just a equation motion. And what we get is, and this one is also easy, because the LZ21 only do not commute with this B term. And they commute with the J term and the U term, so only the G term, they do not commute. So when you do this commutation relation, we get the following thing. So let me just write down the results. This is easier, actually. B, 4, 3, 1 plus B 6521 plus B 8721 plus B 0921. So this looks very strange results. But I have to really draw a picture. The picture is that is this picture. So this is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0. Okay, this is the picture. So we're interested in the on this link 1, 2. So we have LZ 2, 1 on this link. So what is a derivative? Well, we should do the commutation. We should do the commutation. We should calculate the commutator. But this L12 only do not commute with the B term. Okay. However, on this L12 link, on this 1, 2 link, there's a 4 squares attached to this link. So the B operator defined on these 4 squares do not commute with the operator LZ on this link. So therefore, only the B operator on this 4 square is involved, because this B operator is defined on the square. Okay. And so therefore, the L12 do not commute with the B 1, 2, 3, 4. So then we will do the commutation relation and just get these results. But there are also other 4 squares also touching this. So if you draw the other 4 squares, then so that's B operator on these other 4 squares is this. And that's it. And this is a very happy situation, the whole thing closed. We get average of B. Okay. And that's basically the almost like an end of story. And and this is Maxwell equation actually. Yeah, it's a Maxwell equation in the discrete lattice. So you're looking at the Maxwell equation. So next I'll try to explain why this is a Maxwell equation. Maybe write this in a more familiar form, they can see why this is a Maxwell equation. Okay. And first let me try to simplify this equation by introducing two variables. This phi eij equal to 2 pi average of LZij. So this is the one variable we want to introduce. Another variable we want to introduce is average B I J K L is equal to E to the I phi B I J K L. So this is two things we want to introduce. Just a deep notation. And why I do that? Because I want to take a small phi limit, small phi b limit. So basically, when I want to write this, I want to take small phi b limit. Remember that when j equal to 0, the b operator want to be equal to 1. That is the ground state. When j equal to 0, the exact ground state, so I can say the b operator will be equal to 1. So that means the phi b equal to 0. So therefore, we can imagine the Lorentz excitation for the small j limit corresponds to small phi b. So then we can simplify this, because this is a nonlinear equation. You have this times this. We want to make a linearize everything. So we want to take a small phi b limit. When you take a small phi b limit, these two equations can be linearized. And so that makes things simple. So when I do that, I will get the following. Let me try to see. Okay, this is what you get. partial t phi 2 1 e equal to 4 pi g and phi b 4 3 2 1 plus phi b 6 5 2 1 plus phi b 8 7 2 1 plus phi b 0 9 2 1. So this is the one equation we get. Oh yeah, I make a mistake here. There's a minus of Hermitian conjugate, actually. I dropped this very important term. Because this is a real, and this is purely imaginary, so the form I write is wrong. So it's when you really do the computation, you have this minus is Hermitian conjugate. And so this is purely imaginary, and you cancel this I, you get something real. Okay. So because the minus Hermitian conjugate, you can see that when this is small, this operator minus the Hermitian conjugate, just I times the phi b, just only I times phi b appears. The linear term I times phi b appears. And then that's how we get this term. So this became a linear equation. The phi e and the phi b just appear linearly in this equation. Okay. And for this equation, also easy, because this is a this is like e to the I theta partial t, which is equal to I times partial t theta times e to the I theta. You know, if you write b as a e to the I theta, then partial t to the b operator can be written as a partial theta now with this extra b. But this b operator cancel this b operator. So therefore, we have this the partial theta became this operator. But this average is our phi e. So therefore, so we can see that this. So when you do that, we see the partial t operator phi b 4, 3, 2, 1 is equal to minus j over pi phi e. 2 1 plus phi e 3 2 plus phi e 4 3 plus phi e 1 4. So this is another equation. Again, linearized. They're all linearized. Okay. Okay, and so this looks better, okay. So is this a Maxwell equation? The answer is yes. Again, this is closer to the Maxwell equation. And so now let's try to explain why this is a Maxwell equation in the discretized version. So now let's using this intuition that this phi b is like a magnetic flux. Actually, that's the way I introduce this, really uses a magnetic flux. So we know that the B dot in the Maxwell equation is a curl of E, the curl of E. So here, essentially, the phi B is a magnetic flux. The phi E is like an electric flux. So therefore, this time derivative of phi B should give us a curl of E operator. And this is a curl of E operator. Why? Because the phi E is like a electric flux. But what is this combination? This combination is a sum of the electric flux along the loop. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4. We just sum of electric flux here, 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 here. We just add them all up. This is a curl of E. That's it. So this is a curl of E. Oh yeah, this is E, certainly. This is curve E. And then from here is that the derivative of the electric field is a curl for B. And this combination is indeed a curl for B. Why? Because look at this geometry. So this, those four terms are really the magnetic flux through these four squares. And when you sum these four in this particular, actually, I didn't, don't have, if you look at the orientation, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4 is like this. Okay. And the orientation for this is 1, 2, 5, 6. So 1, 2, 5, 6 is again, it's like this. So orientation is such that the sum of all this, it's really like doing the curl of a B field along this. It's like sum of the magnetic flux through this four square, which give us these loops around this 1, 2 vector. And that's really give us a curl of the B. Yeah. So therefore, so what I try to say is that I will not really do it. And but you can imagine, this you can imagine you have a smooth, you can imagine you have smooth magnetic field such that the phi b is actually equal to the integration on this square of this magnetic field, so times the normal direction of the square. Okay. And then for the phi e, you can also assume you have this suppose you have a smooth electric field. Then you can assume the phi e is that, you know, phi is on the link. So let me draw the link. So you can imagine you have this link have this square cross section of this unit area. And then phi e is really the integration on this cross section. It's very hard for me to draw of this E field. Okay. All I want to say that you can assume you have a smooth magnetic field and smooth E field. Then interpret the phi e, phi b as a magnetic flux or electric flux of this smooth E and the B field. And then you can, using that, you can rewrite this equation for this smooth B field and E field. And then that's, and these two equations will become a Maxwell equation. So all I want to do is that these equations are really written on a lattice. You need to take a continuum limit to obtain a standard Maxwell equation for the smooth field. So the standard Maxwell equation is a smooth field limit of this of these two discrete equations. And that is assuming that the phi e phi b all come from the smooth field, and then using this smooth field limit, you can take continuum limit of these two equations, and these two equations will become a Maxwell equation. So basically, that's what I'm trying to say. And So from here, basically. We see that using this equation motion approach, we find that the collective mode of this rotor model actually is described by a Maxwell equation. And the dynamics we are discussing here actually dynamics of loops, because because this B operator and also this LZ operator, they act within this closed loop subspace. They never bring the closed loop state to the open string states. Yeah. Okay.
So these are vacuum Maxwell equations. What would the source be?
That's next class. The open string happens to be the source. That's electric charge. Yeah. Then we'll also discuss magnetic multiple in the next class. So therefore, you not only have this the electromagnetic wave, you also have this electric charge and the magnetic charge in this model. And let me see. Yeah, the thing I just mentioned that because this B operator, the I operator really acts within this closed loop subspace. And we hope the equation motion here, described here, is to describe the dynamics of closed loop. But there is an assumption, it's a kind of a assumption is the following. We hope that using the B operator and LZ operator, we can connect any closed loop configuration to any other closed loop configuration. So there's a danger that maybe your two operator, your choice of operator is too limited. And these two operators only mix up a subset of closed loop states. If that happens, then this is not so good. Means that somehow you assume the fluctuation only within this subset of closed loop states, not among every closed loop states. And we hope that's not going to happen here, does not happen here. We hope these two operators, indeed, actually, these operators are general enough, which can connect any two closed loop states, because B operators add a small loop. Then from any closed loop state, by adding this small loop, you know, one by one, you can go to any other closed loop state. So again, here I want to emphasize that the operator or equation motion approach not always work. If you choose a bad operator, you may get the wrong results. But here I try to say that this operator is a right operator because it only acts within the closed loop states. That's first. Second is that starting from one closed loop state, by applying these two operators, you can get any other closed loop states. So therefore, this operator can mix up all closed loop states. So therefore, using this, I want to argue that the equation motion for the average of these two operators really give us dynamics of closed loop. And so that should be the full answer. The last point I want to say is that, strictly speaking, one should really study this equation on the lattice. They are linearized equation on lattice. It's not hard to study, actually. So one should study the full linearized equation on the lattice and to see the spectrum. And the reason I want to emphasize that is because this continuum limit approach can be dangerous. Because sometimes when you do this full equation on the lattice, you may find a solving situation. The dispersion relation is like, in the Boolean room, it's like this. There's a zero mode when k equal to zero. There's another zero mode when k equal to pi. If you do this small momentum limit, you only capture this zero mode. You may miss the other zero mode. But actually, it's not hard to study this equation motion direct from a lattice. So I will not do it here. But if you actually do it, you'll find for this equation motion, the only zero mode up here is near k to zero. So there's a other, so actually spectrum is rather like this. So there is no other zero mode. So therefore, this is naive using the smooth field to capture the low line extension is okay. But in general, one should really do this lattice calculation. You know, really try to, you know, try to really do the Fourier transformation on the lattice. Then get the Boolean zone. It's just like what we did in the Hopping, lattice Hopping theory, then to get a full spectrum. Yes?
You still get from this picture that the energy of E and B is 1/2 V² + V²
Yes, and so I'm glad you asked this question, but unfortunately I erased what I to the Hamiltonian here. Remember Hamiltonian have a J term, LZ square, and also have this B term, B plus B dagger term. Okay, so what is the J term? The average of a J term actually is a E phi square. And that's like E square term. What is the B plus B dagger? B plus B dagger is cosine theta, is cosine phi B, you know, B positive that is the cosine with a minus sign. When you expand to the second order, you get a phi square. It's a 1 minus phi square. And this 1 is a constant term you drop, and it's a phi B square is the B square term. Actually, maybe in the next lecture, we'll go into this a little more carefully. So therefore, the energy also works. Yes, it's a lattice. So nothing's infinity here. Yeah. So there's a cutoff here. Okay. Yeah. There's a homework. Yeah.
Here's the last homework for those of you who do condensed matter. So you know that you have written only 2 homeworks. So for those of you who haven't started doing homework number 2, probably homework 3 may seem easier. So please raise your hands.
Yeah, okay. This is a comment about you saying that every loop state can be obtained from every other by I'm be operated.
Yes.
It also depends on the topology of your whole lattice. If you
have a periodic,
very, very
good. And I will. maybe in the last lecture, I will come to that. And that's probably very important. So I ignore the topology of space. So in the space, I will plot in the boundary in my torus. Then there's sometimes we have a string wrapped all the way around the torus, which cannot be created by these small loops. And that gives us this topological set of the theory, which actually play very, very important role in this kind of theory. That's very, very important.
So this is not exactly the energy because what we get from Maxwell's theory, right? Because the energy is cosine of phi b.
Yeah, this is a really cosine. You know, this is a this so called compact electromagnetism.
All right.
And so here I want to really emphasize. You know, we treat phi b, phi e, or we treat e and b as a field with a range from minus to plus infinity. Mm-hmm. This is not quite right. So that's why I emphasize it. I'm using this notation, the phi e and the phi b. For phi b, it's very clear. Phi b have a nature that is periodic, and it's 2 pi periodic. So in some sense, this magnetic field do not live on the line, live on the circle. So what I'm trying to say is that when the magnetic field became really, really strong, it's same as a negative magnetic field, and go back. So magnetic field actually live on a circle, they do not live on the line. And so it's really compact. On the other hand, the phi e is discrete, actually. When reading this way, L is discrete. So actually, electric field actually is a discrete. It's not a continuous variable. It's discrete. But however, its discreteness may be very tiny. So therefore, you can naively treat as a continuous vector field. But strictly speaking, the phi e on electric field is discrete. If the phi e have a discreteness of 2 pi, and the phi b have a periodicity of 2 pi. So I write this in this way. And so this will make a, so therefore, strictest, so this is very interesting because you may ask the following question. What is the experimental consequence of the discreteness of the electric field? And so the things that I don't know what to say. Actually, this relates to the existing model. Yeah, magnetic model from existing magnetic model for relate to this experience.
So I don't know. Maybe we should talk about this.
Sure.